Hello and welcome to Code Bites, sponsored by Certified.0. And on today's episode, we're pleased to welcome Sarah Persoff to the podcast. Sarah is currently the engineering lead in Dojo, which is one of the UK's fastest growing fintech companies. Sarah also plays a pivotal role by heading up women in tech within the business, something which she's very passionate about and which we hear more about on this episode. This is a really good conversation where we get a glimpse of her career journey, her challenges of being a female in technology, and also advice to any aspiring software engineer in today's market. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Sarah, thank you for coming on the podcast.
I'm really excited to be here.
Really happy to have you here. Sarah, we always like kicking things off. And if you can just give us an overview of your career to date, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a software engineer, or I'm a team lead now, and I'm a technical team lead. So I'm a back-end software engineer. But I got into this essentially through realizing that I love problem solving. So I was doing humanities largely at school. I was focusing on English, history, classics, and math, and I was never very good at math, but I enjoyed it. And when it came to actually choosing what I wanted to do at university, I realized that actually throughout everything, the thing I enjoyed was problem solving, analytics, figuring out the best way, but all the different kind of cases that could be applied. And I literally Googled degrees related to problem solving and came across computer science. And at that point, I was not good with tech whatsoever. I used to joke that computers hated me. I didn't understand them. And I didn't even really understand what computer science was. I was like, so coding, don't know what that is, but it's generally about problem solving. And this is something that I thought would be fun. Not long after, I was really lucky and I met my partner, and he was a software engineer. So he actually showed me a bit of coding and I just instantly fell in love with it. So I did my degree. I decided to not do a placement year because after doing some internships, I realized I wouldn't want to go back to university. I'm much more a doer than academic. And I essentially just really loved the programming. I really loved the project at university and being able to build things and problem solve. So I then graduated. I found a couple of small jobs, realized, you know, what was really important for me was it's less about exactly what I would be building, but more the right company fit, and found myself being a software engineer. I did that for a year, and then I did a year of a mix of like DevOps, platform engineering, a bit of site reliability, realized that it wasn't what I was passionate about, and then kind of moved into Dojo back as a back-end software engineer, and have just kind of very quickly progressed through because I'm fortunate that my manager recognized my passion and my ability and really kind of put me in the position to shine.
Excellent, Sarah. And for those that aren't familiar with Dojo, could you give us an overview of who you are?
Yeah, so at Dojo, our whole thing is about building a payments platform designed to actually simplify how customers do business. And what that really means is finding ways to bring people in a way that actually empowers the experience economy. So a big part of that is card machines, payment machines, which you'll see everywhere now. We focus predominantly on small to medium-sized businesses because we've realized that is where the experience economy actually is. And on top of that, we've also are working on how do we actually help our customers bring people in. So we have a huge range of things from being able to do kind of online payments, remote payments, to actually the Dojo app, which is for like virtual queuing, booking tables, finding restaurants that fit you, and being able to do the whole thing through the app, which then can also help bring more customers to our customers.
Wow. That's impressive. Yeah. And it's such a it's such a massive space as well, Sarah, within that.
Yeah, we are actually the fastest growing fintech in the UK, I believe, at the moment. So we've really kind of smashed it, and we're going international as well. We're moving into Ireland soon, and then the plan is kind of across Europe and the States as well. So it's a really exciting place to be, especially working at a company that actually empowers the people and tackles big projects with bigger ambitions, but in a way that really gets the best out of everyone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Super. And it's actually, for those that don't know, I think you're great on LinkedIn, Sarah. I've watched some of your great content, and you mentioned there about your getting into the sector and going through education. And apparently that's something that you weren't really too familiar with the other alternative options, you know, beforehand. And you'd mentioned that, yeah, you know, what you thought was a traditional university job, but then you did manage to get a couple of interns. And I love the fact that you said you're a doer there. How important do you think alternative routes within education are to the technology sector?
They are crucial. The truth is that not everyone is academic. And university is important in the sense that it teaches you the fundamentals, and it teaches you how to work in a team, and it teaches you about how to actually approach deadlines and things. But university isn't the only way to learn that. You know, there are fantastic apprenticeship schemes. There's really great companies like Academy that help actually train you. And it's not just about doing, oh, I'm going to do a 6-week course and become a coder. There's a lot more involved. It's about learning how to think, how to apply yourself, how to prioritize. And, you know, for me, I didn't know really about apprenticeship schemes. For me, it was university. That is the next step. That was what I'd always been taught. But I found university is such a struggle because I'm not academic. I'm not good in exams. I find the pressure too much, and it really plays with anxiety, and it felt very suffocating. Whereas actually being able to learn on the job, well, the truth is you never stop learning in tech. You know, regardless of what you do within the kind of tech, if it's product management, if it's design, if it's agile coaching, or if it's being a software engineer, or, you know, within data science, you never stop growing. And that's the truth. That is the thing. Like, it's a continuous iterative process where, you know, the truth is if you're not learning, well, then you're not in the right environment for you. There's never a week goes by that I don't learn something new. If that's a new cool thing in tech, because, like, you know, frameworks are constantly evolving, or if it's how to write tickets better, or how, you know, a new part of what my customers want, there's always new things to learn. So the idea of university where you're having to study actually really old and out of date technology, you know, I think that's something that's changing. What's more important is actually getting those fundamental basics in and learning how to work, because that's something that university helps a bit with, but really it becomes a baptism by fire when you start working, because deadlines aren't the same as they are in university. You know, working on a ticket isn't the same as working on a piece of coursework, because you are working as a team. There is no individual failure. It is the whole team should be there to support you, because your highest highs are shared by the team, and there's no such thing as failure. It's about, okay, what have we as a team not been able to recognize? Maybe we didn't investigate the piece of work enough. Maybe we didn't have a good enough understanding before we started it. Or maybe it's just something that doesn't click for you. And as a team, we should be identifying that, especially management, going, actually, this person really excels in these things, not so much those things. So we should be focusing on, do they want to improve on that? Is that something that they actually enjoy doing? If so, what training can we give? Or actually, you don't enjoy doing that, why don't we find something that really fits you as an individual? Because if we get the most out of individuals, we get the most out of the team. And a happy team, passionate and enjoying what they do, we're gonna produce much better products that fit our customers. And at the end of the day, you should only be building stuff that benefits our customers. Staying customer first, a lot of companies do, but at Dojo, we actually are customer first. Everything we build is with, is this what the customers need? Is this what the customers want? How is this experience going to be for them interacting with it?
Yeah, that end user experience is absolutely crucial, isn't it, Sarah? Great advice. We always like delving into the stage of success influencers. Sarah, what makes you want to succeed?
For me, I get that high from actually, you know, getting something out there, building something, building new things or improving legacy things, actually getting something that's fun to do and it's clean and it's, you know, not to say that there's no stressful moments or things going wrong, but the whole journey is just a thrill. And particularly also then with the women in tech work, because 30% of my time or up to is dedicated to actually helping improve the culture for women in tech. And that can be anything from working with communities or partnerships or working with the execs on how to not be a dick, which is one of I run how to not be a dick sessions, and, you know, working with how to be better allies and all of that stuff. For me, there is a kind of fire within me, because the more diverse your team is, the better it's going to be, you know. And I really get pissed off when I see inequality and people often don't realize that their behavior is discriminatory or it is isolating. And there's nothing that really fills my heart more than having people say, actually, I hadn't thought of that, and seeing that improvement and seeing people become empowered. And for me, there's so much overlap between the women in tech kind of activism that I'm doing and also being an engineering team lead, being that technical team lead, building these architectures. I see how it can empower my engineers in stepping out their comfort zone, growing and feeling like actual enjoyment out of work. You know, I don't want it to be that, oh, I have to go into work. It should be, I'm really excited for what we're going to be working on. And for me, all of those things are just what really drives me, especially when things aren't going well, or especially when things, you know, when the weather's horrible and you're tired and there's no sunlight and, you know, you just want to sleep for a week. It's at those particular moments, reminding myself of the bigger journey and how great it's going to feel at the end.
Yeah, absolutely, Sarah. And on that topic as well, I recall on a previous video that you put out on LinkedIn that when you joined Dojo, you know, you joined a great leader and a manager who actually saw your passion, which is evident, your energy, and, you know, encouraged you to be an activist and give you, you know, a platform, you know, to go on as encouragement. So, and that's obviously something that you're instilling, you know, in your own team, your manager or lead yourself. But what are the key traits and qualities which you feel make up a good leader?
So I think the biggest thing is recognizing that the people you're leading are people. And I know that sounds really obvious, but the way that when I joined, he kind of recognized that I am a person. I work at Dojo. But I'm not, you know, the way that I'm going to benefit Dojo the most is if I'm happy and I'm being encouraged. And what that really means is identifying the people who you do manage, understanding what drives them. Being flexible is so important as well. Like, yes, there are things in place for when you need to be in the office and working hours, but it's all about understanding individual needs and being flexible. So that, you know, as a whole, that person is feeling empowered and fulfilled and growing. And that might also mean at times actually recognizing that that person isn't in the right place in the company, or actually maybe the culture isn't the right fit. You know, it's about what is it as a person. And for me, the whole thing is when, you know, if there's somebody in my team and they want to leave in the future, making sure that they are in the best place for whatever they want to do next. Because it's not really about the company. If I have, you know, a team that's genuinely fulfilled and supported, and it's not just about support to do with the code, it's about them as a person. It covers physical health, mental health, what drives them, you know, understanding, okay, well, right now they're not having a good week, adjusting to that. I'm, you know, at the end of the day, once that person is actually loving what they do, then the company's going to really, you know, thrive off that. Whereas having to force somebody to do something, or them not having that passion, you know, a big thing with especially coding is that I often feel like when I read code, I can tell if someone cares. And you can tell from the way that they write it, that how clean it is, how easy it is to read, you know, thinking bigger picture. And when you've got a team that actually cares and is passionate and loving it, the company will only benefit.
Love that. Love that. It's almost as if the code's a piece of art, how you described it there, with that passion.
100%.
And you can see that.
Really, I think a lot of people think that coding is not creative, and that if you're in tech, it means that you're not a creative person. And I often joke, I'm not that creative. But the truth is, it is an incredibly creative thing, because there's so much involvement with designing how the code is going to be. You know, it's not just a small amount of code, how this fits into a bigger service, a bigger thing. You know, it's not an isolated silo, it's actually part of a much bigger machine. And, you know, kind of the whole analogy of a watch, you know, and if a teeny part of the watch is off, then the whole system fails. It's a similar thing with coding and software. And there's never just one solution. There will always be so many different ways that you can approach a problem, and creativity is crucial there, as well as diversity, actually, because each person is going to have different experiences, and understanding your customer's needs, relating to those, well, customers are diverse, therefore the people solving those problems have to be diverse, and creativity is an inherent part of that. Because if you're not being creative, you just do the exact same approach, you're not actually adapting as tech grows, customers grow, needs grow. There's always a part of yourself that you're putting into it to solve it in the best way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know you could talk about this topic as well, but, you know, diverse just drives innovation, Sarah. I love the background you came from, Sarah. Obviously, as a technologist, you know, you've looked at DevOps, you know, SRE, and obviously you've then moved, you know, into a lead engineering role and now managing a team, getting involved in architecture, you know, working with one of the fastest growing fintechs in the UK. If you were to kind of reflect and take stock, I suppose, in your career kind of so far to date, that, and it doesn't necessarily have to be from a technology point of view, but what would you say has been the biggest challenge that you've had to kind of face?
So this is something I think about a lot, and I think the answer changes depending on my mood to a bit, as is natural. I'd say the biggest thing is navigating the industry when there is, unfortunately, there is still sexism. There is still people who, you know, believe that if you're, especially as a young woman, that you're only there because of being a positive discrimination hire, or because of, you know, ticking a box, or, you know, that there are still, unfortunately, people who don't give women in the industry that same basic, like, baseline respect, meaning that women often actually have to fight harder and always be super. You can't, you know, being average often gets viewed as not good enough compared to male colleagues. And I think the biggest challenge with that as well is how that really feeds into imposter syndrome, feeling not good enough, feeling like you don't deserve to be there, like that kind of, you know, worry and anxiety that you're not doing good enough, and you have to be not just good, but you have to be the best. And that, I think there have been different times in my career that has been a problem. And once that kind of sets in, it's really easy to come back. And I guess, you know, the challenge here is it's an ongoing thing. You know, if I've had a bad day, or I'm just really tired or something, or I thought I had everything figured out, and then we start working on this big project and it just all goes wrong because I didn't know about something. It's so easy in that moment to feel like I'm an imposter. But on the flip side, having a company that's supportive, that's where it's important. You know, when I joined Dojo, my manager said he had to get me to unlearn imposter syndrome and unlearn bad habits that were essentially me criticizing myself, and learning to accept compliments, accept praise, and start learning to recognize it within myself. And it is an active challenge at times. But, you know, I think that the industry is starting, it is changing, and it's slow. But I think a lot of people face a similar challenge, unfortunately, especially women and other minorities.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's something else that you'd mentioned before. You know, you talked about, you know, perhaps, you know, women in the workplace over the past 50 years, you know, and how 50 years ago they were seen as a housewife, you know, whereas now obviously there's huge independence and leaders. But you also made a valid point where the education on the male side to kind of complement that probably has been lacking, which means there's been a huge gap, you know, in that parallel journey over the last number of years. Would you would agree?
100%. You know, I think it's really still evident in all of society. You know, the fact that Andrew Tate has been so popular with teenagers, you know, that's a shocking thing to me. But I think a really big thing is that women were taught, you know, the woman's role in society and their independence. It has been a really, really quick progression. And unfortunately, you know, there's still an idea that, you know, if you've got roles and you're focusing, for example, on bringing more women into that role, you know, I've heard many kind of men say that means that role is being taken away from them, not realizing that there are so many roles there and that actually they've got this inherent advantage because of that fact that people do have unconscious bias, and they don't realize that they are treating women and interviewing women at actually a different level to the way they might be men. And just to be clear as well, this isn't just men. Women can also have internalized, you know, misogyny, and they can also adapt, you know, especially if you've come from a really, really sexist environment. To succeed, you're going to have to internalize that and kind of, unfortunately, drink the Kool-Aid and get on board with it. And, you know, there's a certain amount of human nature as well, where, you know, sometimes people feel, well, I had to suffer, so why shouldn't you? It's in character building and all that kind of nonsense. And a lot of this, I think, largely just stems from not being taught at a younger age about equity, and equity as well as equality, because it's not just, oh, well, now you both have the exact same things. It's about how can you both be on the same playing field. And this is such a critical part of bringing more people and keeping people and minorities and women in the industry, because women are, like, I've read different kind of statistics over time, but women are significantly more likely to leave the tech industry within the first 5 years. And I think I read something about how like 60% of women leave the tech industry by their mid-30s the other day, which is shocking. But there is still this idea, even now, even with people who are on the face very liberal, who make comments about, oh, you know, if you want to be a mother, it means you're not going to be able to succeed as well in your career or have the same amount of responsibilities. But I always think, well, what about the father? You know, why is this only for women? And there's just so much still to do, but it's a bottom-up and top-down approach. We have to educate better. We have to have better representation so that people don't just only ever see men in positions of power. I read a thing the other day about how, I think in the kind of list of CEOs within tech in the US now, there are now more women than CEOs with the first name John. So, you know, there's still a huge like way to go in having women in leadership and having healthy female role models for both men and women. Because the other thing that, you know, it's very rare that I hear from a man that their role model is a woman. But on the flip side, I hear many women say their role model is a man. And this kind of teaching people from a younger age so they don't have that unconscious bias, but also continuously wanting to improve, accepting that you don't know everything and that you might have unconscious bias, and that also culture changes and things that were okay 5 or 10 years ago, they're not okay now. And accepting that you need to grow, because, you know, it's understandable being defensive, but the goal here is that anyone can come into the industry, and not just the industry, obviously, but that's my focus, but, you know, regardless of gender or race or ethnicity or physical abilities as well. When I was first job hunting as a grad, I have a diabetic alert dog because I have very severe type 1 diabetes, and he is a service dog, or an assistance dog. He is trained, and I had so many companies find a reason to suddenly turn me down when I told them about him, even though I was at the last step and I was a perfect candidate. And, you know, it's about being accommodating, because I think that at the moment, the culture, and it's not just within tech, you know, there's a very kind of individual mindset, but that isn't how we're going to grow and have it that everyone has actual equal chances. And understanding that, okay, this role to begin with is only, you know, they're focusing on trying to bring women in, but actually that doesn't mean they're only hiring women for the role. It means that they're going to be focusing on, when they're looking for candidates, they're going to focus more on bringing in women, because women are less likely to apply for jobs if they don't meet every criteria of a job, whereas men statistically are likely to go for it if they meet half. There's so many different aspects of trying to bring women in, but that doesn't mean that it's at the detriment of men. But I think a lot of the time people don't understand the nuance of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Sarah, I wanna talk talent, which is obviously, you know, a major thing for companies to grow, to excel. And obviously we've talked a lot there as well about diversity. But I'm keen to learn, how would yourselves at Dojo, you know, highlight and look for good talent in the marketplace? And is there any key traits that you like to see or hear?
Yeah, so a big thing with specific kind of trait is it's about the person, right? And this is a really hard thing to interview, right? It's not a quick thing. It's about, you know, especially in tech, it can sometimes be, well, do you know the language and stuff like that? But actually, especially as you get more senior, it's less about that, because you can learn a new language, you can learn a new infrastructure, you can learn a new cloud platform. It's about problem solving, passion, seeing that there's somebody who actually doesn't know something in an interview and finding out how they go about learning and figuring it out. And especially for me, that's way more important than, does somebody know the answer off the top of their head? Because, well, that's, you can Google it, right? But seeing somebody not know, and how would they go about it? What would they do? And that's a really, really critical thing, because you're not, nobody knows everything. And there will always be times that people don't know stuff, and how they react to that is so important. And what are they about? You know, what hobbies do they have? What are they passionate about? you know, are they going to be an actual kind of like committed participant here? Because especially in a company that, you know, work hard, play hard, and is such an evolving, fast growing company, you need that team dynamic, you need that bond, you need to have people that are going to really love what they do. And you can't have that if somebody doesn't know how to not know something. I feel like I spend half my life saying, I don't know, but let me figure it out. You know, I don't know, but from my experience with X, Y, and Z, I think this would be a good solution, but let me go and ask others, you know? And I think especially having proper conversations with people is so important instead of just automated tech tests. I'm very anti those kind of online technical tests where it's, there's no nuance involved. It's like going back to university, right? It's just memorize some algorithms, but that's not what work is actually like. That's not what problem solving is actually like. There's always nuance, there's always domain context, and there's always unknowns, and that is way more important than being able to just get to the right answer instantly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the problem solving in the here and now, and how you react to that, as opposed to, you know, a hands-on, you know, perhaps kind of technical test, which is something that we still see, you know, a lot within the industry, Sarah. And I'm keen to learn, how would Dojo retain talent?
So in general, in regards to like women in tech and especially female leadership at Dojo, we focus on kind of a model of attract, grow, and include. So the kind of attract thing to do with kind of, you know, some of the stuff I already mentioned, and really employer brand awareness, you know, partnerships, companies such as Sheep and Code and Academy, etc. But the really important thing here is grow and include. So something that we've recently kind of released is career pathways, really having clear, transparent processes for progression and development. And that's really a big thing for actually individuals feeling that progression and growth. But there's so many other things as well, like mentoring programs for women in leadership and really kind of making women aware that they can go into leadership. And leadership doesn't just mean people management. You know, that's another big thing, is that as you progress, you know, there's more individual contributor and people management like side of it, but that doesn't mean that both don't have leadership qualities. There's also, you know, focus on the early career development. We've actually found that people seeing us caring about that helps retain, because they know that we're not just, you know, doing lip service on caring about women in tech and diversity. And then there's also stuff such as, you know, training. So like I said, I run how to not be a dick sessions, which focuses on sexism and women in tech, conscious inclusion workshops, but also things like events are so critical for the morale, you know, coffee mornings, external hackathons, you know, away days, making people feel respected and validated. And then also actually encouraging people to bring their general passions into the workplace. So things like technical blogging, you know, making sure that we spotlight women in the business and their technical skills, you know, but not just singling them out for having to be a woman within tech, but actually, well, you're not just a woman in tech. What are you doing? You know, is it that you've just done a huge marathon, or is it that you've worked on this really cool thing? And that encouragement of people. You know, a big thing for me was the company saying, we recognize your passion. We want you as part of your job to go out and do podcasts like this, talk at events, start a blog. I've started a blog, although I still need to find the time to continue writing posts on it. And that was actually the insistence of the founders of Dojo, because they said, you know, you're limiting who you can actually reach because you're just doing talks and things, but you should get this on paper because this is important. And it's that kind of focus on a person being a whole person instead of, you know, a worker within a company.
Yeah, sounds a great culture. So a good combination between empowerment and collaboration, upskilling the people to be the best versions of themselves. So I love that. Sarah, we're going to get on next to the Copites as the audience question. And this is where we identify, you know, real life challenges, problems, issues, you know, across the sector from engineers. And this one is based on, I suppose, the industry and, you know, the underlying perhaps kind of pressure that software engineers put in themselves. We do know that technology is a competitive industry, and there's often pressure to be innovative in your workload and always kind of perform at your optimal level. And we often see, actually, whenever software engineers are recruiting, the companies are really keen on what tech projects they're doing, you know, for instance, outside of work and things like that. And I suppose that can result in a bit of, I suppose, maybe stress in actual software engineers trying to meet those high standards. And in worst case scenarios, perhaps maybe fall in love, you know, with the industry. What advice would you have to a software engineer who's currently in that situation and feeling those emotions?
So from my personal experience, I have, since very early on in my career, not had the energy to work on projects outside of work. I put my all into what I do day in, day out, because I love it. But that means I don't have that energy outside. And it comes to finding the right company and culture fit for you as an individual. If, you know, there's a company and they have such a big focus on, you know, individual projects, well, honestly, it might just not be the right company for you then, because they're focusing on that instead of you as a whole person. You know, being able to say, okay, well, I haven't done any individual projects, but I was able to deliver this huge project at work that had this huge impact. And on top of that, I go and do this. And I love, you know, doing puzzles or hiking and, you know, not just being your entire identity is coding is personally, I think, important as being a well-rounded person. And that isn't to say that somebody's passion and hobby can't also be programming. For me, if I see somebody who spends their whole day working and then seems to be able to spend all of their evenings and their weekends also working just on a different thing, that can actually almost for me be a concern. Are they going to burn out? Because if you're working that hard, to me, that means you're way more likely to burn out. So I guess ultimately the biggest piece of advice is realizing it might not be the right fit. And that's perfectly fine. It's really important to remember when you are interviewing for roles, it is a two-way interview. Mm-hmm. It's not just the company interviewing you, it's you interviewing the company to see if you're going to be the right fit and if you're going to be able to flourish there.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely key. And I'm a huge advocate that it's always the candidate interviewing the business, just as much as the business is interviewing, you know, the candidate. So you can't expect to get the right environment. So I think just to kind of alleviate that pressure, that, you know, you need to hit this, it needs to be right. It's a great lesson, Sarah. So thank you for that. And to wrap things up, I mean, what would be your advice to any aspiring software engineer in today's market?
Just try stuff out. There's no such thing as failure. It's just learning. Like, things will go wrong. And, you know, you might end up crying on the couch at 3 o'clock in the morning because your piece of code won't work and you don't know why. Which has happened many times. But, you know, it's about learning, growing and seeing the bigger picture. And also talk to people, network, reach out to people on LinkedIn, just to say hi. You know, if you see somebody that you find inspiring, reach out to them. What's the worst thing that can happen? They just won't respond. But, you know, what's the best thing that can happen? You get a great relationship out of it. You get a mentor. You get opportunities. Everyone has had to start out, right? Nobody was born a software engineer. Therefore, the right people will understand that and will want to help.
Yeah, absolutely. Quality advice. Power of the network can take you in many different avenues, Sarah. So thank you for that. Sarah, listen, this has been a fantastic conversation. If people want to find out more about your good self and the work you're doing and Dojo, how could they go about doing this?
So for me, the best thing is on LinkedIn. I post all of my stuff on LinkedIn. So there's links to kind of public talks I've done, my blog posts on Medium, which I will be adding more to soon. And I'm always available to message. I might not get back to you straight away, but I'm always 100% down for helping women in tech. And then for Dojo, the biggest thing is that we have a dedicated career. So dojo.careers. And on there is all about us, our culture, roles available and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Brilliant. I'll plug those in the show notes as well for the audience. Sarah, listen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It was really great to be here.